What's going on, guys? Welcome to another episode of Healthspan Academy. I'm your host, Craig Shearhart, and joining me today is two-time Olympian Annika Newell. So Annika started pole vaulting back in high school and went to Texas State University with honorable mention All-American in 2015. She qualified for the Canadian Olympic team in 2016, and then 2017 recorded the second highest jump in Canadian history at 4.65 meters. Which is, I can't even wrap my head around how high that is. finished 12th that year in the World Championships, and 2018 finished 8th at the Commonwealth Games. Qualified again for the Olympics in 2020 and just competed this past summer. And she's also a personal trainer with Elite Sports. We're going to talk a little bit about her training, her methods, her coaching, and the whole gambit. Annika, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Cool. Let's start this off with how athletics kind of came into your life. Was that like something that was forced on you growing up, or did you just like have a huge, like, were you just a sports nut growing up, or like, how did that look like in your family upbringing?
It wasn't forced, but my family will tell you that they knew I was an athlete, before I could even walk.
Oh, wow.
just because I'm not totally sure why,
just doing but push-ups,
basically. Yeah. I walked at a very early age at 6 months, and I was jumping in the crib up and down kind of thing. And so they just, I don't know, they knew I was born for something athletic.
That's wild.
And my dad was a distance runner. My mom was a ballerina at one point.
That's a good mix of genes.
Yeah. You know what it is? So I ended up doing gymnastics for about 10 years.
Okay.
When I was young, got a pretty severe back injury that took me out of that, and kind of forced me to go and like try other sports, and ended up being a blessing just because track and field, I guess, was my calling.
That's awesome. So this is something I've always been curious to how, like, I've known one pole vaulter in my life, and I never really got to talk much about it. So I'm curious how that starts. Like, how do you decide that you're going to throw this pole into the floor and try to go over? Like, you got to break that skill down, I assume, at some points. So how did that all start for you? How did you get into pole vault?
I actually was forced into in high school.
Oh, really?
I was running and sprinting, doing the hurdles, long jump. I loved all that. And my high school coach said, we need a female pole vaulter. We need some extra points in the field events. Like, that's an area where there's not a lot in the state I was living in the US. And we need a female pole vaulter. You did gymnastics, you need to go try pole vault.
They're pretty much the same.
Yeah, close enough.
Yeah. Totally.
It does help to be a gymnast.
Yeah,
for sure.
I feel like that helps no matter what you do next. So you just have that body awareness. Yeah, I feel like everybody that was a gymnast is some freak athletic in some sport.
For sure going to put my kids in gymnastics one day when I have them.
Yeah. Same. Yeah. It's crazy.
Nowadays it's a little bit different. You know, the sport has come so far. We understand we have a lot more knowledge about what to do and how to train kids.
Right.
So being a coach, I teach mine, and I think to myself, like, man, I wish I had a coach like me growing up. Like,
yeah, no kidding. So you pick up you kind of got forced into it, and I guess pretty quickly you realized you're pretty good. How did that pan out? Was there a moment we decided you want to take a run at this and try to compete and maybe get a scholarship, or how did that sort of unfold?
So I did excel fairly quickly in high school, and then I started getting recruited from universities, and that's kind of when I thought, I could do this at, the collegiate level.
Cool.
And so I took my visits and figured out where I wanted to go. And I wasn't actually totally in love with vaulting, and I got recruited as like a heptathlete and a multi at other schools, and I wasn't sure what I was going to do.
Nice to have options.
Pardon?
Nice to have options.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Ended up choosing Texas State because of the coach there, and I kind of fell in love with the area, just a really beautiful campus and whatnot.
Cool.
And the head coach said, we'll just have you as pole vault, and that's all she wrote.
Wow. That's awesome. So fast forwarding a little bit, we'll talk a little bit about the Olympic experience, because you had two drastically different world environments with those two Olympics.
Yeah.
Let's start with 2016. Talk about like what that was like. What are the highlights? What are the first memories that pop in your head? We think 2016.
I mean, the first memories for me was getting all the Canadian gear, and really excited about that.
Yeah.
But then also, a big memory for me was walking out into the arena. That was just because it was my first international competition ever.
Oh, wow.
And so first time truly on like a professional stage, because I had competed as a pro, you know, throughout the summer to train for it.
Right.
But I hadn't gone to any international meets besides, you know, within Canada and the US.
Right.
And so this was just wildly different for me. And I absolutely choked. I got the nerves 100% got the best. I was like trembling. I was so nervous.
Oh man.
But at the same time, I thought it was so cool to be out there with all these women from different countries and different areas of the world. And they're all so freaking fit and they're like fierce and just were like warriors on the runway. And I'm like, oh, man, like I'm going to make another Olympic team and I'm going to come back like that.
That's awesome. So fast forward, I guess 5 years technically, but 4 years of the Olympic years, I guess. What was it like, comfort level? Was there a different kind of mentality going into that? Did you like focus more on your kind of mental game going in and prep, and or how did that look like? What are your top memories from 2020?
I mean, 100%. I probably worked my mentality the most, because the physical is there for me. It's never really been an issue. I know that I'm strong enough, fast enough as any other pole vaulter right now. So it's really about, you know, how can we win at the mental game? And I want to make sure that when I step on the runway at the Olympics, that there is no doubts, there's no fear in the back of my mind whatsoever. Right. And going into 2020, I felt that way. I felt like a machine. I
That's
was
awesome.
Had 110% confidence in myself. And we had just worked so hard. Like the hay was all in the barn for me. So I was ready to go.
That's cool. It's such an underrated piece, is that mental piece. Like I feel like at that level, that's probably, I mean, obviously there's like a freak athletes that are just maybe a step ahead, but I feel like that mental piece is just underrated in terms of like preparation and confidence and visualizing, like just going in ready basically.
Yeah.
Cool. I have to talk a little bit about your pre-jump ritual, because this is something that makes unique. I think when you watch like videos of people competing, that's the one thing that stands out to me. There's a few athletes that have a ritual, but yours is so distinct. Is that something that you kind of developed over the years? Like you have, it's like you throw the pole up, back step, look back, and then you do a quick step and jump. It's exact same every time. Is that just about the routine, or how did that come together?
Yeah. It's interesting because every vaulter has like their thumbprint. Well, even, you know, jumpers, long jumpers, triple jumpers have like their own unique, you know, step back ritual, whatever it is. So you kind of just do what comes naturally to you. And over the years it develops and you either keep doing it or you have to alter it a little bit to, make something better for your run or, you know, find different strategies and whatnot. Actually, it's funny that you mentioned that because we had to change it this year.
Oh, really?
Due to a foot injury. So I'm not able to do my same skip. And it's really hard when I've done that for years. And that just feels so comfortable.
Deprogram yourself. That's
so
wild.
Now I'm finding like my new ritual and I can feel myself like getting settled into it. Each time we have a ball practice, it starts to feel more and more natural.
Right.
And I find myself doing something over and over again. I'm like, this is feeling good.
Starting to come together. Grooving that motor pattern.
Yep.
Cool. So that obviously is huge and kind of leading into successful jump. And there's so many different moving parts going into that. I'm really curious to hear you kind of dissect the move, especially that you've kind of started coaching a little bit. So break down the movement. Like, what are the common things that go wrong in a lift or in a jump?
In a jump. Okay. So, I mean, we'll start from the beginning. The run. I mean, if you kind of like trip out of the back, either you stop completely and start again, like try and reset your head, or you're running down the runway thinking like, oh crap, that didn't feel right. Oh, but I'm still gonna go. It's fine. We're just gonna take that. Like,
then you're in your head.
So many thoughts go through your head. It's ridiculous. And the main thing is like to just take all those thoughts out.
Yeah.
So like how I do that is keeping count on my run and keeping count on my strides and like
interesting.
How I block out the
You're literally exercise. Counting your steps.
Yep. I'm counting my steps. Yep.
Huh.
So
wow.
Like just keeping that count for me makes me not think about anything else.
Huh, that's
smart. That way my hands get up when they need to be. Cause if our, if on our takeoff, if our hands aren't up at the right time, then, that pole will basically spit you back out the other way or hit you in the face, which is not fun. As soon as that takeoff is probably the most important part of the jump, in my opinion, anyways, cause if you don't hit that just right, the rest of the jump's going to be complete shit. Excuse me.
Yeah. All good. All good.
And then from there, it's like, you kind of just go blind and you skit your ass over your head and hope that you make it over the bar and that you're in the pit.
Yeah. I assume you've done that. That just kind of becomes automatic and your just body knows what to do at that point. So like leading up to it, the pole placement, the run, those are kind of the biggest pieces or like you can kind of dissect yourself.
Yes.
Do you ever go back and watch film of yourself anymore? Yeah.
And oh yeah. All the time. I mean, we watch film on a regular basis, like every day at practice.
Yeah.
Of your size. Like nitpick what we can change, what we can better.
Right. And do you look at the piece in the air? Like there's like the pole bends and I don't know what the stages are called, but you basically do that like big, massive toes to the air, throwing your, to get your core involved, accelerate up and over.
Yeah.
And then turn. Like, is there a moment where you might spin too fast in the air? Like, are those like,
Yep.
Fair enough.
I mean, you want to basically time up the pole to where you're getting the most pop from the pole.
Right.
And so if you don't swing fast enough, then you miss that.
Yeah.
Or potentially you swing too fast and you're ahead of it and then you fall off of it. So, I mean, it's just all these little timing things. So we constantly have to say, okay, you know, you swung too fast or you turned too fast on that one. You didn't quite catch the timing of the pole.
Right.
You didn't catch that fling at the top.
Right.
So it's super technical. I mean, it's like little bitty things that you have to constantly work on and it's just got to come together basically perfectly. So, I mean, it is routine and you do it so often. At the same time, it's like, you never do the same vault. You never do the same vault.
Yeah. So if you're looking at, do you ever do like kinematic analysis? Do you actually like put markers on and like measure angles and acceleration, that kind of piece or do your coaches do that or does it get that detail?
Somewhat. Yes. I mean, there's a lot of physics behind it. So absolutely. Yeah.
My biomechanics brain is just spinning.
I love it. I mean, we definitely have some of that information. Like my coach has this big binder of the physics behind every movement that is supposed to put together the perfect vault.
Right.
So we look into those things. To me, again, in my personal opinion, it's really more about the feeling than the physics.
Right.
Cause you can run, you know, like a
bad. You can't tell yourself to accelerate like 2.8 meters per second.
Yeah. It's just, I mean, it's got to come from the body, from like the heart, from the brain. You can't dissect it that physically. It's just impossible.
For sure. Yeah, it's true. You drive yourself crazy. Maybe there are people in the world. They're probably not pole vaulters. So let's talk about differences kind of from day one to training right now. You talked about how the sport has totally evolved. What have been the biggest differences in what you do in practice and training now versus when you were maybe just preparing for that first, like maybe collegiate level?
Oh, gosh. I mean, that's hard to say because I'm a different person. Like I train so much harder now than I ever did in college. And that was partly just because I kind of goofed off and didn't really handle my business. And now it's like, I want it. Like I love going to practice every day. Like I want to have the extra work and put in that time every single day. So, really for me, the biggest difference is, like we said, being nitpicky in the jump and right now I'm having to be really nitpicky with my training too. Just with what kind of sprints I'm doing and what I'm doing in the weight room and what I do for recovery, especially I'm getting older and I have to take so much extra time to warm up and cool down just to make sure that I don't get hurt. So
Let's dive into that a little bit. As a coach, I just get curious about that kind of stuff. So you talk about training. What is a snapshot of your training? You're doing like a lot of Olympic lifting. You're doing like, do you do a mix of sprint, HIIT, aerobic, or what does the training look like on a typical day?
Oh gosh. All the above. I mean, it's like, Monday is vault practice and sprints anywhere from like 100 meters to 200 meters. Tuesday is weightlifting and more sprints, but shorter sprints, like 5 times 20 meters, 30 meters, 40 meters. Wednesday is like some active recovery and some yoga. Thursday is like another vault practice, more Olympic lifting, stuff like that. Friday, we maybe run like 200 meter repeats. I mean, we just like, I feel like as a pole vaulter, you have to be really well-rounded, similar to like a decathlete.
Right.
So you got to work everything.
Yeah. So when you say active recovery, is that just basically like an aerobic session, like aerobic cardio stretching kind of thing?
It'd be like, like dynamic stretching and a little bit of jogging around, like just getting the muscles moving, like blood flowing and then having a little bit of fun shaking out.
Fair enough. And are you doing mobility and recovery daily?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Like when we get off this call, like I've got my physical therapy exercises that I'm going to go through and that'll take me about an hour to do. Yeah. And then I'll have dinner and wind down for bed.
Nice. Just a full-time job. So knowing what you know now about training compared to what you did then, you talked about now that you're your coach and like, what advice would you give yourself going into it back then? Do you think you kind of hit it right? Would you tell yourself to train harder earlier going on? Do you think you kind of had a good life balance back then? What changes would you make if you could go back in time?
I mean, I've had this talk with a lot of people, obviously. The one thing I want to go back and be like, Annika, you can be a badass. Like, get your head out of your ass and train. Freaking, like, you're going to be good. Just do it kind of thing. Yeah.
And you probably had people telling you that, but it'd be different if it was yourself, I guess, right?
I needed to be myself. I needed to come for myself. But the other thing is that I think about is, if I had trained as hard as I do now back then, I might potentially be burnt out already. Yeah,
true.
And true. I may not feel the way that I feel about the sport right now. I have a passion for it that I didn't have then, and it might switch. Like I might have lost that and now not feel the way that I feel.
Yeah. What is the window? I don't feel like it's like 8-10 years for competitive, like pole vaulter. Like what's the best case? Has anyone gone to like 4 Olympics for pole vault?
Yes, really? They have. Wow. I know. And it's hard to say, but my coach and I did have a conversation about this. So we were looking at kind of all the stats between like the professional elite women pole vaulters. Mm-hmm. And really we were kind of looking at it and it takes about at least another like 5 years past college before they really hit their stride.
Right.
It seems like is average. And then from there, it's like the top pole vaulters are anywhere from the age range, like 27 to 31-ish, 32 in pole vault. So it's kind of like, seems like you mature a little bit later in the vault anyways.
Do you think that's just because of the skill base? Like it just takes you like forever to perfect your jump?
I think it's skill base and maturity too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. With you know, your workouts and your training and being able to handle situations and getting the experience behind you. I think that's really important.
Right. Have you changed much of your, like 2016 to 2020, you talked about like the mental piece. Have you changed like your other prep, like your tapering or that kind of stuff? Do you ramp up recovery leading up to a comp now, or what are the major changes you've made in like prepping for competition?
So nowadays, like I said, I am getting a little bit older. And I am much more acutely aware of how my body is feeling and I'm able to make adjustments kind of on the fly, which is great. You've got to be able to just handle adversities when they happen. But I have a strength and conditioning coach that I have worked with for the past 11 years.
Wow.
And he's got me like down to the T. I mean, I could have a workout and he'll be like, "Hey, by the way, your pinky toe is going to hurt in 3 days." I mean, that's obviously an exaggeration, in 3 days, like my pinky toe will hurt. Like he knows how I operate. So we've got it down to a science for me, basically.
That's awesome. Let's chat a little bit about the nutrition piece. So I'm curious because this is kind of like aerobic capacity isn't crazy. I mean, like you'd hear like distance athletes need tons and tons of calories. Do you track your calories? Do you kind of, are you more worried about quality than quantity, or how does your approach go with nutrition?
So it started like, I mean, in kind of when I first got out of college, like for 2016, when I was training, I tracked my calories. Mm-hmm. And I got a nutritionist in 2017 who also had me track my calories. And then I kept working with him and we moved from calories to kind of like understanding what goes on the plate and what goes in the food and stuff like that. And I was able to really understand like what I need personally. Mm-hmm. So I was able to experiment a bit and figure out like what works best for my body. Like, and so now like I know for a fact about how many calories I eat in a day.
Yeah.
But I never count it. And I can look at my plate and be like, I'm not eating enough protein right now. I need to just go ahead and add some more chicken on there or something. And then throughout the day, I can pretty much tell like if I've done a good job with my nutrition, because I'll feel it the next day if I haven't eaten what I need to eat.
Fair enough. And does that change throughout the year? If you're like kind of in an off season focusing on more strength, do you ramp up the protein and calories a little bit? Like does that phase with your training?
Yeah.
Fair
enough. I hate the idea of like bulking. No offense to
bodybuilders.
Bodybuilders. But definitely
probably not like to your advantage as a pole vaulter.
Not so much. Like I need my poles to shoot me up there.
You're gonna get some hypertrophy, but you probably want to focus more on strength and power. Yeah.
As long as I'm within a certain weight range, but I'm also power cleaning a certain percentage.
Right. Yeah.
That's when I know I'm right where I need to be. That's always how I tell.
Fair enough. That's awesome. Let's talk about what's on tap next. What are your next targets? Are we focusing on the next Olympics? Do you have a competition coming up? I know you're coming back from an injury. What are the immediate goals for you in the sport?
So short-term goals is going to be this outdoor season. Like you said, I'm coming back from injury and I'm really excited that I'm finally starting to feel better and hit a groove now. So I'm planning on opening up next month. And then I'll go from there to Oregon this year for World Championships and hopefully Commonwealth Games in Birmingham.
Cool.
So I'm really excited about that. And then next year is another World Championships, and then I'll pretty much be ready for Paris. I've actually started working on my French. So I'm taking French lessons so I can be ready.
Yeah. I hope it's not the Quebecois French because they won't understand you in France.
No,
it's not. Fair enough. So let's chat about your coaching a little bit. So was that sort of a natural progression as you got better at the sport? You felt like you had this knowledge base and wanted to share it. Had you always wanted to get in coaching, or how did that sort of start for you?
I kind of always knew that I was going to enjoy coaching anyways. And then when I got to university, my pole vault coach also has like a pole vaulting club that has pretty much kids of all ages. Like the youngest there right now is 8 years old, and the oldest pole vaulter there right now just turned 65.
Wow.
So we
good
have
for like them.
It's unbelievable. We've got the whole age range. So she basically had me come and help out with some club practices and some of the camps that they host. And that's how I got into it. And I loved it. So then I started basically coaching there full time ever since.
That's awesome. So, and every athlete is like an aspiring pole vaulter?
I mean, they want to like, I mean, every athlete has different goals, right? Like some are wanting to make the varsity team. Some are wanting to get to that collegiate level. Some are just doing it there for fun. Like we have masters guys that come in and jump. They're just doing it for the hell of it.
That's unbelievable.
It's so great.
Nothing's going to keep you young, probably more than pole vaulting. That is something I should pick up when I'm 65. I love that.
Yeah. No, it's awesome. We have a great range of people and personalities in there. So it's a lot of fun for me.
That's cool. And have you found that that's actually helped you as an athlete, being able to see through that coaching lens, being
a little bit more analytical? Because I'm able to see everybody's vault. So I'm able to dissect it, and it's really fun because I'm like, oh, I do that too. I'm telling you how to fix it. I need to fix it like that too. But the other side of it too is like when they get a new PB or they do something right and they look at me and their face just lights up and I'm
that's
like
the best feeling.
Like that's the love of the sport
That's why you get into coaching.
I never want to lose.
100%. And is that kind of the next step is your career is kind of leaning full into coaching full time?
Most likely. Yeah. I would say, I don't know, but most likely. I can't see myself stopping anytime soon.
Fair enough. I love that. So let's shift into your current kind of personal health wellness habits right now. I don't know. I think things are a little bit more forgiving in the US, but you're also in Canada. Probably the most drastic change coming from Ontario down to Texas, where I feel like restrictions are non-existent. And mental health obviously plays into that. So talk about your major priorities around your personal health, wellness, and what your habits look like around that.
Oh gosh. It was actually really like a wake up call for me spending those couple of weeks in Toronto with the lockdown and with all the COVID restrictions. I mean, living in Texas, like, I'm sorry, does COVID exist here? Nobody really pays attention to it that much. And I'm free to do whatever I want and see whoever I want.
Yeah.
Which for me is really great because I rely on going to coach my kids and having a very like personal relationship with them. Mm-hmm. And I rely on some of my best friends in the area that really boost me on a daily basis, right, or can be there for me if I'm down, mm-hmm, or,
yeah,
you know, they help push me.
Right.
And so to not be able to see that, like, that's just like when COVID first hit, that was really hard. Like, yeah, everybody being so isolated, that yeah, really takes a toll on you for sure.
Yeah. This has just turned into a mental health pandemic.
Yeah. I mean, it really is. I felt really bad for my kids too, mainly because it's like, they're not really sure how to even wrap their head around it.
Yeah. The crazy thing for me is that, like, there's kids that are just developing and their first like social interactions are in Zoom and they're like watching TV. And I wonder if they can differentiate between like a TV show and someone they're actually talking to, like, yeah, when they're a certain age. It's just like, but that's wild. It's a crazy world we're living in.
It really is. It is.
Awesome. Well, Annika, this has been an awesome chat. I really appreciate your time. Is the best place for people to link up with you on Instagram, or do you have a website, or what's the best way for people to follow your material? Yeah,
probably Instagram. Working on some other things, but it's difficult.
Fair enough.
So yes, Instagram, flygirl93.
Cool. Yeah, we'll link to that in the show notes. Well, I appreciate the time. This is awesome. Really appreciate it. Hopefully we can catch up again sometime.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Oh, cheers. All right, thanks for tuning in at the Healthspan Academy, guys. We'll see you next time. Hey, what's up, guys? Thanks for tuning in today. I hope you enjoyed the episode. Thank you so much for supporting this channel. This has been a fun project. We're growing in viewership every single week, and we obviously couldn't do that without you. So thank you for continuing to tune in. I really hope you're getting value out of the programming and the content. Just wanted to give you a heads up. I've been working on a book on health and longevity the last couple of years. Been collaborating with my colleague, Dr. Dan Vitale, who's an expert in the field as well. And we've basically just kind of summarized the literature, some of the techniques that we found really useful in the world of biohacking, what our exercise regimen looks like, what's, you know, cardio type stuff is going to help us live longer and healthier, mobility work, nutrition. We've covered the whole spectrum, everything that you can basically be in control of in your health and fitness kind of moving forward to help you live as healthily as possible for as long as possible. And it's available free for download. So if you click on the YouTube banner, you'll see a link to download the blueprint. It's also on our Instagram profile or on the website. You can click on fivepillarmethod.com/optimize to get your free copy of the book. And I hope you enjoy it. Hope you're keeping well. Thanks again for tuning in, and we'll see you next time.